Hi there, podcast listeners. I'm Amanda.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Rachel.
And this is Coffee in the Macabre. We're a podcast dishing out all the strange.
All the unusual.
With a little bit of creepy in between.
So pour yourself a cup of coffee.
Lock your doors and strap in for some questionable conspiracies.
Particularly paranormal occurrences.
And the most menacingly macabre stories this universe has to offer.
You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can listen wherever you get your podcasts.
So we made it to Halloween. That's pretty fucking cool. Our official Halloween episode. Our first one ever.
Spookalicious.
Look at us. And on brand AF, Quiva is getting a fucking text and reading it instead of responding.
I was actually turning my phone on Do Not Disturb so it wouldn't keep going off. You're welcome.
Okay.
Ooh, I love how like she's embodying the character as well. For anybody that can't currently see, but you can all check out the Instagram.
Which is everybody except for us three.
Oh shit, yeah. Quiva is currently dressed as Shigo from Kim Possible.
Kim Possible.
Call me, beat me, if you wanna reach me, it's okay. Maybe you need me, be there. Call me, beat me, if you want. So what's the sitch?
No, you have to do it. Din, 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 din.
Lizzie is Sleeping Beauty. If Sleeping Beauty didn't prick her finger, but fucked up her whole entire face and joined the dark side of the force. And it's fabulous.
Hori Aurora.
There will be pictures.
Hori Aurora just sounds so lovely.
Aurora.
Ahura.
Oh no. Horror.
Ahura's.
Horror.
Is that not from Hora. Like Star Trek?
No, no. Do you remember Paint? But do you remember Paint? The song where it's like Ahura, 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 Ahura. Yes.
It was meant to be it. It was meant to happen.
It was. And you.
And then there's me.
Who is in full ghetto. I'm seeing feathers. I'm seeing overdrawn lips.
Oh yes.
I'm seeing a fancy pants.
We even
necklace.
Got my little mole here.
Oh my god, I can see it now.
I don't know. Yep.
I thought it was a fleck on my screen because I thought my laptop was dirty. But I realise now it's not to be.
No. It's eyeliner. I am dressed still as a... Well, let's be honest, they're called saloon girls. They're prostitutes. Yeah. I am an old Western prostitute.
That's what I am.
Yes.
Quiva.
What? I thought they were just like waitresses and like, you know, like
it's not
bartenders and shit in the saloons.
No, it's not Hooters. No, it's sell your cooter. Like, it's...
They serve drink and ass.
No, that's what I mean. I thought they were waitresses who dressed like, you know... fancy back in the day, and then they just would get extra tips.
They're the hooker. You've clearly never played Red Dead Redemption.
No, I haven't. You'd have to buy it for me. Fair play.
Which is why my name is Looking for Company, darling.
You look like you're struggling.
Yep, officially started our Halloween spooktacular. I'm struggling so bad. I have this big fucking fascinator here.
Just take it off.
Ruining my life.
Just take it off.
And put the headphones on properly. Look at you two encouraging me to strip. If you want to see more, darling, it's $1.50.
$1.50.
The strip.
Hey, that was a lot of money back then, okay?
Yeah, it definitely was. What, like fucking 100 euro or something?
What were our usual rules? Above 10 is Lizzie and below 10 is Quiva.
I have a fear now of the number 11 because I feel like I've gotten that quite a lot when it's my turn to go first.
You needn't fear the number 11 because it's 12. Okay, then we have a 12, so that means it's you, Lizzie. You are kicking us off for this week. And let's have a spooky, let's dive in.
As murder is a very heavy theme on our podcast, most of the time, I've decided to open the episode with a fantabulous bit of spook. Spooktaculous, one might say.
Ooh. Oh, we're making up words today. I'm here for it.
Sorry. And I guarantee someone's going to be listening like, what the fuck is this dopey bitch on about? But anyway.
Untrue. This is how we get branding and merch. Keep it up.
Bring up the blonde stereotype, even though not being funny. Yes. It's not a stereotype at all. I'm a dumb cunt. So, I've decided to do the Slua. So we're going to bring it back. Because for those out there that don't know, Halloween kind of originated with like Gaelic speaking countries, so the likes of Scotland and Ireland. So I was like, bring it back. Bit of a, is it homage or homage? I can never.
Homage.
Thank you.
It is a French word.
See?
Also, Wales actually is counts as Gaelic and speaking languages.
Yeah. True. And the Manx as well. So just before I start, I got my research, just to reference them, I got it from godireland.com and irelandtravelguide.ie. Very hard, by the way, to find any information on these fuckers. But the slua, meaning host or unforgiven dead. So the sluas are terrifying fae-like creatures from the underworld that hunt down souls. They've been described as dead sinners that came back from the grave and roam as malicious spirits.
Oh, we know what I'm coming
so
back
So they're basically like really aggressive grim reapers. So the grim reaper kind of waits around for people to die and they're like, let's go fucking find them.
Yeah, they're kind of like soul snatchers, yeah. So kind of like grim reaper without no chill.
Dementors. Done.
Fuck it. Exactly.
Kind of, yeah.
Ew, ew, ew. No, you just did the the fucking Barty Crouch, like. Oh, I made my neck feel funny. I don't like that. So the spirits are said to come from the west. So your parts, Montrequiva. And they fly in massive groups similar.
You said it. Wait, I'm sorry. I have to slow you down for a second, Lizzie. You said it wrong.
The west.
The west. It has to be the west.
What part? Like, did they say?
The west of Ireland and the wild west. Huh?
Did they say like specifically county-wise, or is it like
just the west?
The west.
Just the west. Okay. Just into the west.
So Galway, Mayo, Clare vibes.
Okay. Yeah, pretty much so. So they are said to fly in massive groups, similar to a murder of crows, and not just like any sort of crow. I mean, big bastarding crows that would put the fear of God into you. These yokes are huge, and they're said to visit the houses where someone is on the brink of death to steal their soul or has already died. So even the dead can't escape them. It's heavily practiced during wakes that the window facing the west in the home would remain closed for fear that the slua would pay a visit at midnight and steal the soul of the beloved one.
Oh my god.
And dickheads. Give him a minute. Let him die in peace.
These are absolute arseholes. Yeah. These are not nice. That's why it knows, like, people like, oh, fairies are nice. Like, these are part of the faith. All of them, tramps.
Dickheads.
Tramps, yeah. Absolutely.
Honestly, they take what they want and they make no apologies. And honestly, can kind of respect it. But don't be grave robbing the dead before they're even in the fucking grave.
That's what makes it fun.
That's actually, do you know what?
So they kind of have banshee vibes as well, so they can predict it.
No, not it's more so.
More they can smell it.
Out.
Yeah.
Ooh.
They can smell it.
So just a prangy. A pretty picture of what the slua are like look like if you were ever to see one. They're haggard and thin, loose skin that barely clings to the bone, and they're putrid shells of the people that they used to be. They were bird-like even when not in flight. Leathery wings that are kept close to their bodies that look like a weathered cloak. Their hands and feet bony and clawed, and sparse, thin, greasy strings of hair that cover their faces to hide their protruding beaks. So absolutely fucking stunning.
I mean, how thick would your hair need to be to cover a fucking beak sticking out? Like, would the beak not just stick out?
Do you know what
I mean?
Yeah, but the fact that they said it was sparse as well, so why?
Thin and sparse. So it's like
just the emo fringe.
Greasy snake.
And it's greasy as well, so it's sticking to their faces. So it's literally like,
honestly,
and then the beak.
You know what it is? They are just bald men in denial, and they've got those three strands of hair that they do the comb over with.
Yeah. I love seeing owl fellas like that when it's windy outside, so you just see them. Feathers back up. It's like it's waving at you. It's hilarious. So as for a bit more on their background and how the slua became the dark, vile creatures that they're depicted to be, right? So it's said that they were once a human fae hybrid. So it'd be like if a fae had a child with a human.
Oh.
This is what you'd have.
Right. They fucked up their fucking breeding. So what happened to make them bird people?
Oh, you're about to find out. I'm glad you asked. So yeah, like I said, they have gone amok. And when the light came to Ireland, and the light being Christy fucking Anity, so they became lost sinners seeking to drag the unfaithful down to hell with them. So as soon as the Christians came, they banished them down to the depths of hell, to where they feel like they were belonged. And so as kind of like, well, fuck you. You think we're going to go peacefully? We're going to come back every now and again and steal the souls of your loved ones.
So hang on the fuck a minute. You're telling me these fairy folk, or half fairy folk, were living just perfectly normally, not a bother
well,
on them.
Well, no, they were.
They went a bit awry.
They were.
And then the Christians came and were like, go to fucking
ruined
hell.
Ruined everything. As they do.
See what
are
I mean?
You shocked?
Do you see what I fucking mean?
And
these fucking...
Right,
no. Okay. Given their ghastly and frightening appearances, they hide in the dark and in forgotten places and lay in wait for midnight, waiting for their prey. Now, although they primarily steal the souls of the dead or the dying, they're not opposed to taking the souls of the healthy, happy, and living. But they are the sweetest to take, so therefore, more of a challenge.
Right.
But the Sluagh can be evaded by staying indoors after dark, and especially by not tempting the fate by walking alone in secluded areas. So stay away from highways. Don't be walking down the road by yourself. Don't be in the forest. Stay the fuck away from the forest in dark.
No,
not even for the Sluagh,
like,
but in general.
Back when the Sluagh would have been believed in, and it was back in the out west, like, everyone only ever walked, and everyone always lived in villages where you'd walk between each other's houses at night, because
not even a street light to fucking light
especially
your way.
Especially come around, like, winter
what
time.
What they used to do is they'd go over to each other's houses, and, like, because you wouldn't have telly, they'd tell each other fucking scary stories, and then people would have to walk home after.
Commune in the fucking kitchen for an old bitch and a chat,
like. And now we're just like, these are the general warnings that we give to women because of creepy men. So isn't that nice?
The Sluagh are a metaphor.
They're a metaphor for rapey rapists.
So while the Sluagh can steal a soul on any night, one of their most favourite times to reap a soul is during Samhain. So the unforgiven dead roam the earth on Iahauna, Halloween. For the non-Irish speakers, including myself, because I barely know how to fucking speak it anyway.
Good old Iahauna.
So, they roam the earth on Iahauna, greedily searching for souls to steal. So it's kind of like a cat on cat, like, no, catnip. Like, they go fucking full-on berserker mode. The only way I can describe it. There's contradictions to practices to do on Halloween. So for the Sluagh, they tell you not to light a bonfire because it can attract them to your whereabouts. But that's in total opposite to the Pooka, where you have to light a fire for protection and you wear a mask.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it depends on what your belief.
The Pooka is Rona.
So basically, you're fucked if you do, fucked if you don't, let's be honest.
Yeah. One of the spirits is getting you.
I mean, I'd prefer not to get caught by the Pooka, personally.
Yeah.
Not lighting the fire, personally.
Well, no, the Pooka, you light the fire so the Pooka don't come near you, but if you light the fire, then the Sluagh will get you.
Yeah, but if you don't light the fire,
am I remembering right?
The Pooka could.
The Pooka, isn't he like a shapeshifter as well? He can turn into a horse and shit. And he
It's not just one.
Drags drunken men on adventures.
There's not just one.
Well, yeah, but like we'll say
they're
one.
They're like kind of shapeshifting, like mischievous fairies. Yeah.
Yeah. Are they the ones that primarily like to turn into black horses though? Or am I thinking?
No.
Okay, I'm thinking of something completely different. Then, sorry. No, not kelpies, because kelpies just are horses. But not horses, but like, you know what I mean. I can't remember when we were doing our folklore episode. I had read up on one. I thought it was the Pooka, and there was all these stories of him being a horse, and like chasing a load of hounds to their death off of a cliff when they were chasing a fox, and then that he would like take drunken men onto his back and bring them on mad adventures and like then make them forget. But it was basically
that
was your metaphor for drinking yourself blind. Yeah, exactly. So that's why I was like, what's up with the Pooka? Like, what's your issue with the Pooka? He sounds like an absolute hound. Like, would love to go drinking with the Pooka, but must be a different spirit. Either that or I found very, very terrible misinformation about him.
Look, one or the other. As we say all the time, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not saying I'm right.
I'm not saying you're wrong. But onwards with the Sluagh.
So, the Sluagh don't always hunt by themselves. They also participate in the wild hunt. So the wild hunt was a soul-raving chase led by fierce leaders. So a lot of European countries have their own version of the wild hunt, and they all have their own individual leaders. And many spirits follow the hunt for their own gain. Our leader of the hunt is good old Fionn McCool and the Fianna.
Of course it's fucking Fionn.
And also, Warrior King... Oh God, bear with me for a fucking second. How do I pronounce this bastard's name?
Spell it.
M-A-N-A-N-N-A-F-A-N.
Wait, say it again. M-A-N.
Yeah, there's too many M's and N's.
M-A-N.
Yeah.
A-N-N-A-F-A-N. Who are...
Manannan?
That I thought was Manannan as well.
Yeah, I think Manannan.
Yeah. M-A-N-A-N-N-A-F-A-N.
Manannan. Yeah. Okay, so I was right, and I fucking... Look, anxiety wrecked myself before I checked myself. So, also with Warrior King, Manannan of the Otherworld. So he's kind of like our leader of the Underworld. essentially.
Oh, so he's like our Hades.
Yeah, but he's very cute. Cool, I think. Like, I looked into him a little bit, and I definitely think we'll cover him in a future, like, don't we do, like, mythology.
Yeah.
He's quite cool to look into. So, the Slua would accompany the leaders of the hunt, along with various other supernatural hunters. So, like, Grim Reapers, everything. Even though these are very similar to a Grim Reaper. They'd all join in as well, and even some like vicious spirits just on their own. Like if you had like a dickhead ghost or like a black spirit, they join anybody. Like, it's kind of like a welcome party, to be fucking honest.
So when we die and we're spiteful, we can just like float along. We're like, oh lads, they're having a hunt. Do you want to join
them? Absolutely.
Here for it. This is a great story. I am loving every minute of this.
Now, if you are ever taken during the hunt, you become part of it. So there's no escaping it then. So once they take your soul and you're in the group, you're not fucking leaving.
So do you hunt with them then? Or do you just permanently get hunted as
a spirit? No. If you join the hunt, like, so if they take you to join it.
Oh, but that's fine.
They take your soul, yeah. But they can still take you like before your time. Do you know what I mean? It's not like you want to go.
Any day is my time at this point. Let's
like
be
they
honest.
They could take me, and then I would just have to live as part of the hunt.
Yeah.
Like they recruit people, and you can't leave. Basically.
I think there's something fundamentally wrong with me that I'm like, this sounds great.
But no, I just kind of say like a good deal. They all seem like they're pals. To be honest, can you imagine? Like,
yeah.
And it's like,
it just sounds like having a never-ending sesh.
To be honest,
definitely having shots like
you're running around the streets acting the shite late at night.
And I get to torment the living without being socially
and you can
judged.
Be
it sounds like a good deal.
Like you don't have to be selective. You can pick anybody you like, so you could like anyone that's ever annoyed you. I mean ever. Torture the shit out of them.
Which is a long list.
I'm actually not seeing any negatives, to be honest.
Me neither, to be honest.
But
that's what I said. Living is the problem, death is the prize.
But just a slight warning, if you're ever like drawn to the attention of the hunt, the only way you'll be able to steer them from your path is by putting another in your place. So you must willingly sacrifice another to be taken in your stead. But while doing so, yes, you may escape the hunt, but that doesn't mean that the Slua won't come for you because they select on their own accord. So by you like willingly sacrifice yourself for another, your soul is now putrid. It's repugnant. You're a damned unforgiven soul. So on they will come and drag you back down to hell with them.
Do you mean if you sacrifice another for yourself?
Yeah, like if you put someone in, if you give someone up for you.
No, yeah, I know. It's just you said if you sacrifice yourself for another. You said it backwards, so I was like, would that not make you, like, good? Would that, like, reflect them? Actually, yeah, if you give yourself up, do you, like, get to go somewhere good?
It's either the hunt or hell, bitch. You have to pick one.
So it's a lose-lose, then. You may as well just let yourself
die. Yeah, you may as well just, like, be taken as part of the hunt rather than be fucking...
Yeah.
But then it's
them.
Like...
And let them take their chances.
It's like either you're going to burn in whatever sort of hell ring that they have in the underworld, or do you have to chase around feeding on souls for the rest of eternity?
I mean, I prefer to chase around souls. Like, selfishly.
Yeah. It does actually sound a lot of...
Like...
You're a bit more crack-like.
It's a lot more fun. And you don't have, like, weak lungs like we have now when we're alive, so we'd be able to keep the stamina up forever.
Oh my god, does that mean I'd be skinny as a slug? Oh, so the Irish are all burly and thin and thick. Oh
exactly.
Living for it.
I mean, I wouldn't look well bald.
Oh, me
like,
either.
I already have a big ass nose that's basically a beak, so I'm okay with it.
I mean, wigs are a thing.
I mean, when you have...
Spirit wigs, though?
Well, they're not.
We'll just go back and raid Elizabeth Bathory's fucking collection.
Oh, fuck off. For like knitted wigs. Are you serious?
Oh, the fucking bits of scarlet and everything.
Don't even stare at that, because I'm off on another rant.
Sick.
We need to stay focused. Yes, I agree.
Now, it's possible to also inadvertently call the Slua to you by two means. The first, by the mere mention of their name. And I'm sorry, all of us are fucked. Because we've said at least 40 times.
Yeah, and I'm actively being like, that sounds fun.
They're
Let's
coming for
go.
You.
I actually intentionally have not said it because I'm kind of being from the West and all. I'm kind of like looking out the window.
I'm in Germany. Does that make me safe or can't they cross oceans?
They probably can cross, but I'm sure you're safe.
Yeah, I keep the window on the West closed.
Interesting.
Just to be sure.
I have no idea what... I have no concept of what West is, but I'll
find
out.
Yeah, you actually know...
No.
I'm holding myself back.
No. Keep it to your fucking self.
Guiva, oh my god.
Keep it to your fucking self.
We will discuss this when we're not recording.
So second is true silent hopelessness of one's heart, either by mourning or, you know, a bit of seasonal depression. So it said if someone dies of a broken heart, the death is actually due to the Slua, that they sought out the tortured soul and took it back to hell with them. So there are some people like, if like a partner dies and they die shortly after, it's like, oh, they died of a broken heart. It's the Slua apparently can sense how hurt their soul is and basically come to take them out of their misery, but also for their own weird sick satisfaction as well at the same time.
You've just had the worst loss of your life. You're heartbroken. Everything hurts. You feel like you're dying. And then you actually do, and you get dragged to hell just for being sad. Well, that's us double fucked anyway.
We know where we're going now.
The depression squad is going.
Death is not a mystery anymore.
No. When? Not if. When Cesspool disappears, you know what happens.
The fucking slew it. So in a book titled The Fairy Faith in Celtic Countries by W.Y. Evans, it details personal accounts and sightings of the Slua. So an account from Barra in Scotland where a child was taken. And only after the soul of the child had been extracted, its lifeless body was dropped from a great height, hitting the ground with a sickening thud. So they just seen the child going through the air, and obviously everyone stopped looking up and seeing what the fuck had happened. Because while they're going away, another way said they're like big birds. The other way people kind of have the idea that big game birds can hold something the size of like a small deer or a small child and carry it away.
Yeah.
So that's what they were like thinking had happened. But as a child, before he hit the ground, he could see that the face was already lifeless and then hit the ground with a like sickening thud. So they think then that must have been the Slua, because during the time there was a massive group of enormously large blackbirds and ravens swarming around the village, and it was very peculiar given their size and how many of them that there were, and given how the Slua are meant to travel, they think this is what it is and what ultimately killed the kid.
I'm still focusing on the dead child falling from the sky. Traumatic.
I had murder, but I kind of forgot I did have murder.
And child murder, no less.
My dad actually knows a guy. He lives in, I want to say, Donegal when he was a kid. And when he was a baby, he was out sitting on a little, you know, on a blanket on the grass because it was a nice day. And his mum went into the house and a fucking eagle came down and grabbed him on the back.
Stop.
And tried to take off with him. But the kid was obviously like too heavy because kids are fucking solid AF. So he got let go anyways in the end, like kind of got dropped or whatever, but
that is so
he
scary.
He still has scars on his back as like was a grown not, man.
I was gonna say, was he not ripped to ribbons? Because oh my god, like, their feet are like fucking like yeah, and they proper like lock into you. Or, well, they're prey, like, not particularly people, because they don't tend to go for us naturally. But you know what I mean? Like, they will dig those claws in to get you up off of the ground. So, oh my god, his back.
Jesus Christ.
That's traumatic. Stop. I have fears of, a falcon swooping down and stealing Oreo someday. It's a good thing he's a fat cunt. Like, stressed. Not the point. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
So, if they're denied their rightful feast, as they like to see it, they will retaliate by means of poisoning cattle, cats and dogs with poison darts. And sometimes they've been known to eat people alive, as apparently happened to a woman in Roscommon. Apparently they just ate the rich alive.
How do they know?
Maybe, bitch was dead, right? Very much a dead bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Crows numbing on said dead bitch for a bit of food. And then, because they're meant to look like big dirty blackbirds, and crows, they're like, that was the Slua. She did it while she was alive.
Sounds about right.
Because
that's why I'm like, how do they know she was alive before she got eaten?
Oh no, but as is the way with like every Irish folklore or like mythology story, it's so dramatic. So like she might have like passed away from God knows what and just being feasted on by the birds. Or like, oh, there was some miraculous creature that feasted on her while she was alive. All that draft.
Or to be honest, she could have been like, she could have like dropped and had like, she could have had something wrong with her and she could have just dropped and like still been alive. And like, as you know, crows and blackbirds, and not blackbirds, crows and like all that kind of stuff, they'll, magpies and stuff will eat like bits off sheep while they're still alive. So she could very well have been alive and dying.
Yeah, you can smell death before you actually fully die. Like, you can smell death coming. Or animals more so. Can.
No, it's like sheep, if sheep roll over, like, and it's so sad. With their hair, their
Alexis,
bones,
don't listen.
They're too round to get back over because their legs are too skinny to get the momentum to roll themselves back over. Mm-hmm. So they end up trapped in their backs, and then the crows come and like pick out their eyes and stuff.
That was delightful. Fabulous.
Yeah. I was just going to say more so that like when a fish starts dying, like the bottom feeders will start eating it already before it has passed, because it can tell that it's dying. Like you can smell the decay before it fully passes. That's more what I meant.
But I was just going on
Reva's
the crows
was
stuff,
way
that,
more
like,
dark.
She could, she, yeah. I meant, I more meant that like she could have still been alive and like.
Yeah. Oh no, I'd say you're probably right. Like, you know. I say it's closer to what.
But I doubt she got trapped on her back. Like, is she not able
no,
to roll over?
How heavy
like,
she was.
Well, she could have been a fat bitch.
She could
this
have fallen.
Very true.
She could have been old. This she could have had like gammy legs like Lizzie.
I do not have weak ankles like you. Mm-hmm. They're strong.
Oh, Elizabeth, please.
You know what? This woman never existed. Let us continue with our life.
So just beware this Halloween and every other night to follow, and remember, living or dead, sinner or not, all souls are ripe for the taking up to Slua. Once a soul is taken, there is no mercy, no release to the underworld. There is no escape. You are simply doomed to circle the darkened skies, sealing souls for the rest of eternity. Ba-pow! And that is me done.
And if you don't think that's a good deal, watch your back. Stay indoors. It's COVID-19 anyway. You have no business trick-or-treating this year.
Either super pneumonia or a fucking spirit. Just stay inside.
Exactly. You're either getting pneumatic lungs. Is that even
I
how
think
you
so.
Say it? Or
we're not smart. Just
I don't even
say
know if that's
it
the
with
right way to say it.
And people will think you're right.
Lungs with pneumonia. Or you're getting, you know, tortured forever by the Slua. Because fuck you in particular. So, yeah. Happy Halloween, I guess. Well, that was great. They are a very good part of Irish folklore that I didn't know
aren't
a fucking
great?
Thing about, actually. I'd never heard of them. Yeah.
Took some digging, but...
I would say so. Because, like, we would have heard about most of them growing up because, you know, we had to be traumatised to be proper Irish children. Yeah. But I never heard of
Maybe
them.
Maybe we were all just too fearful of the Banshee and everyone was like, okay, they're scared enough.
Well, let her do all the spooking. Like, no. We don't need more than her. Her and the Catholic priest, that was enough to do it for us.
Terrified. What?
Sorry, should I have not have said that?
No, you absolutely should have. I just wasn't expecting it. I mean, they're fucking scarier than anything that has ever come out of this country, so you're dead
exactly,
right.
And the worst part is they're no myth, they're no legend, they are fucking real.
Devils in white colours.
Mm-hmm. See, again, the white devil.
I would like to throw it back to the 10% that I had previously mentioned.
This
well,
is
no,
not
you
a
won't,
tangent,
because what?
This is between episodes.
I had finished my story.
That's what I meant, between stories,
the shock
not
and realisation.
Whatever.
We must discuss the stories, Cuiva. It's a vital part of the podcast. Otherwise, it's just
no, she's,
an audiobook.
She's bodying Shego.
Yeah.
She's trying to...
She's
like,
trying
she
so hard to put it on
her persona, right. You can see like the whole flick of the eyebrows. Like,
no, it's just very
fuck you mean, bitch.
Like,
that's what those eyebrows are.
Moving on with the Halloween spooktacular. We carry on with me. And naturally, I have murder. A Halloween murder, to be precise. I tried so hard to find proof behind the tale of Mary Shaw, but unfortunately she is 100% fictional, and that broke my fucking heart.
Wait, Mary Shaw, how do I know who that is?
Remember the bitch from Dead Silence with the ventriloquist doll?
Beware the stare of Mary Shaw. She had no children, only dolls.
Oh, how do I...
And if you see her in your dreams, be sure to never ever scream.
What did I see her in? I know there's a movie on
Dead
that.
Silence.
No, but
we
I
just said it.
I've never watched that movie, but I've seen.
Oh, that's the only one. This is the murder of Peter Fabiano. I'm just going to get into it and see how we go.
Peter.
So, on October 31st, 1957, Peter Fabiano and his wife Betty were already in bed when, at around 11 p.m. they were roused by what they presumed to be a late night trick-or-treater. Somewhat annoyed, Peter pulled himself out of the bed to go and greet them. When he opened the door, he said, "It's a little late for this, isn't it?" to the person at his porch, who was dressed in blue jeans, a khaki jacket, red gloves, heavy makeup, and a domino mask, similar to the kind that Robin would wear. But they weren't there to fight crime, they were there to commit one.
Ooh. Who the fuck is Robin?
Batman.
Like Batman and Robin?
Oh.
Na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-
wears a mask.
There's lots of Robins
that wear masks.
There's like
Yeah.
I mean, no.
Anyway, how many Robins do you want? Batman and Robin. That kind of mask. You know, the little black fucking...
The little eyelid mask.
Square
the
ones.
Goggles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More or less, yeah. Or like the ones they wear in Umbrella Academy. Same as. So, clutching inside a paper bag with both hands, they simply responded no to Peter's question. Then, with a loud bang, the paper bag exploded. Peter dropped to the ground and the assailant ran off to the nearby car that was waiting and made their escape. Upon hearing the noise, Betty ran to check on her husband, who now lay in a pool of blood from a single gunshot wound that had entered into his chest just below his heart. Betty screamed for help while her 15-year-old daughter from a previous marriage called an ambulance, but it was too late. Peter died en route to the hospital. At first, the police believed Peter's execution-style murder was a gang hit, which were common at the time. But after a background check into Peter's life, they found nothing but a misdemeanor in the 40s for bookkeeping. And he had led a completely clean life as a respectable owner of two beauty salons with his wife since then. So the gang hit theory was quickly squashed. Now, Peter was an ex-Marine who then became a truck driver. And that's when he met Betty. And I would like to know how you go from that to opening two fucking beauty salons.
I would like to know what you mean by bookkeeping. Does that mean like kind of adjusting his taxes in his own favour kind of thing?
No, being a bookie. It was when like gambling was very much no. Couldn't do
oh,
that.
Oh, okay.
So he was, yeah, he was being a bookie and...
He was taking bets off people, which isn't allowed.
Taking
wasn't
bets.
Allowed
yeah,
at the time.
Exactly that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was it. That was his only crime, basically.
One question I did have is how do they know what the assailant, I suppose... was wearing, right?
Ah, because we know who did it. But I am being deliberately vague because I will get into how it happened. Cause this story is wild.
I was literally thinking honestly, like Peter described it, but then you said when he died en route to the hospital, I was like, there's no way he even was thinking about what the person was wearing. Was
no,
like...
no. So, wasn't a gang hit, basically. Yeah. Just to summarize there. So, after the shock of finding her husband dying on the floor, naturally, Betty went into a hysteric state and had to be sedated for a few days after the incident before she was of any use to the police as a witness. When asked if Peter may have had any enemies, Betty offered up one name, Joan Now. It's R-A-B-E-L. I would sort of just say, yeah, Rabel.
Rabble.
Or...
Rabble.
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 Exactly. Yeah. I would have said Rabble, and then I heard it pronounced Rabel, but I feel like that's a bit...
This is
fancy.
A bit over fucking the top, but at the same time, it's yeah. like Mrs. Bouquet.
Yeah, exactly.
True.
Exactly.
But you know what, fucker?
Say whatever you feel like, because I don't think it really matters.
We're going to go with Rabble, and I'm sorry if I'm wrong, but no, I'm not, because fuck this bitch. But anyway. So, not much is known about Rabble's life, except that she may have been born in Philadelphia, because that was her birthplace that she gave on a shipping manifest when she was travelling from... Honolulu back to, I do believe it was Los Angeles.
Wait, does she not have any fucking documentation whatsoever?
No, nothing is known about this woman. She is literally a fucking ghost. Nobody knows. Other than that she maybe kind of possibly was born in Philadelphia. She was a photographer and a writer, and she had learned how to write at the University of Honolulu. And she spent like an awful lot of time in Hawaii and would travel back and forth. But then in... I believe it was 1956 is when she moved back to Los Angeles. And when she did that, she was hired by Peter to work in one of his hair salons.
Right.
So she had been married in the 1940s, but it didn't work out and they got divorced and she'd kind of been single. We're going to say single in inverted commas.
Right.
Uncommitted,
since
we'll
then.
Say.
It's not for lack of trying. I had 5 tabs open because hence also I'm not giving sources because... the internet was my source for this. Like, can't give direct sources because it was just bits and pieces from everywhere.
Yeah.
But literally I looked everywhere to try and find anything out about this bitch, and there's very few pictures of these people involved in the story available either.
Ooh,
so
very fucking
anything
mysterious.
I'm giving you is everything I could find.
Hmm.
When Joan went to work at Peter's salon, that's where she met Betty, Peter's wife.
Right.
And Betty and Joan soon became very close friends. That's so close, in fact, that when Betty and Peter were having marital problems, Betty left to go and live with Joan.
Friends my whole.
Uh-huh. The relationship between the two women was described as abnormal, which in 1957, that was as close as anyone was getting to saying lesbians.
Okay, can I just make... This is my theory from where we are now, and you can tell me at the end.
Go for it.
Is obviously the two ladies just wanted him out the way. It was a Chris Watts thing. Just kill the husband to get him out of the way. That's my
possibly
guess.
unconfirmed, because there's another moving piece to the story that I haven't gotten to yet, so bear with me. So, homosexuals, 1957. There we are. Peter was outraged and threatened by the relationship, obviously, of the two women. And after Betty decided her marriage with Peter was worth saving and returned to him, he made her promise to cut off all ties with Joan and never even speak her name in his presence ever again, which she agreed to. So we can assume that Joan was salty about this.
I mean, taking her lady lover away from her, not even being able to speak her name.
You know what I mean? And she would have lost her job as well because of this. It's not even mentioned.
If your name is banned from somebody's fucking household, right?
Yeah.
That's going to do something to a person.
Mm-hmm. And your lady love has been taken back to her shitty husband. Actually, no, not shitty husband. I don't, not victim blaming here.
I don't know what their marriage was.
Well, it's a bit, at the same time though, like, it's shitty of him to kind of be like, you have to leave her, but at the same time, anyone who was having an affair outside the marriage, it's like, it's them or me. A lot of people would just leave the marriage,
exactly.
But he gave her the option of like, you pick her, but you don't get me in at the same time.
That's it. She chose to go back to him. So I think it is reasonable that he told her to cut Joan out because,
obviously,
you know, if David left me and I took him back, which would never happen, I'm not naive.
No, but if
he did,
if David wants to like go off with someone else and you found out about it, you're obviously going to be like, listen, so I'm taking you back, but you can never speak about her, or I don't want to ever hear about her again. Because
if I catch a whiff of her perfume near our house, that's the end of both of you.
Yeah,
exactly that. I would do the exact same thing in this situation, except
very
I wouldn't
reasonable.
Be taking him back.
No. And is there, did
Silly
they say
Peter.
Why she chose to go back to him? Because obviously she probably more than likely was still in love with Joan.
I don't know. I think
probably,
see, it's not quite
Shane.
Outright said that, because you don't get a lot from Betty either on her side of this. So it might not be that she was like full blown lesbian. She could have been maybe bisexual. So she did love Peter. Because she was previously married. I don't know if I said that. Yeah, her daughter from the previous marriage.
Yeah.
She'd already been married and was divorced, and then she met Peter and they got married. So she seems interested enough in men for a double marriage, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know why she chose to go back to Peter, but I guess she still loved him, is my only answer I could possibly give.
Yeah.
So Joan was then taken by police for questioning, but she denied all knowledge of the murder. She'd been home all night, she'd said, as was evident by the presence of her car in her driveway all night. Which was true. Her car was indeed in her driveway.
Does the bitch not have legs? Like, she can travel by other means.
Other means indeed.
Ho-ho.
Because a neighbour ratted her the fuck out.
Always be nice to your neighbours. Especially when you're going to be doing dodgy shit.
I mean, I'm ratting the fuck out. I don't care who it is. If someone, like, if they're my, I, oh my god.
So, said neighbour, actually the hard done by neighbour lady, because I would be mad as fuck in her situation. And I'll explain why.
What do we call her? Petunia.
I don't think we can just assign names to people in a real case.
Priscilla. Yes, we can.
An alias.
All right, okay. Priscilla Petunia neighbour had also informed police that Joan had borrowed her car on Halloween night and returned it with 37 miles on the clock.
Cheeky cow.
This bitch even had figures for how far she had driven.
Cheeky
like,
cow.
You know what I mean? Imagine borrowing somebody's
car. But you know
car.
What? I do not blame her for ratting her out. I was like, she could see the lazy cow had her car in her driveway, but yet wanted to borrow mine and clocked 37 miles up in it. I don't fucking think so.
Exactly. Mad as fuck.
But also, you
I
have to
so
snitch
salty.
That shit out as well, because like, if that gets caught or...
Your car is implicated.
Yeah, you
the
need
crime.
To be the one
exactly.
to be like, listen, this shit shady shit happened. Like, you need to be the one to get there. Like,
when faced with being caught out on her lie, Joan simply said she had borrowed the car to pick up some groceries.
That's 37 miles away.
Oh, girl, please, come on.
Do you know what I mean?
Get off it, like.
Also, at like, I think she borrowed it at 9:30 in the evening.
You're trying to get caught now at this stage.
Groceries,
I have no fucking safety for this.
Groceries,
which they're probably closed.
At least fucking damage
your
car.
Well, there was nothing to prove otherwise, and there was no other evidence connecting her to the murder. There was no shell casings found at the house, no fingerprints or anything. You know, they'd been there, shot him, left. So there was no physical evidence to attach anyone to this crime, and no other enemies of Peter. Nobody else's name, nothing. They had nothing. So the case threatened to run cold after Joan was released, because nothing connected her to the murder, like I said, and no other witnesses were presenting themselves aside from a teenager who had seen a car speed away from the house and Betty's statement of hearing a voice of a man pretending to be a woman when Peter answered the door.
What?
Most of the things I looked at, it said 2 weeks, right? Again, I'll say this, the sentence in a second, but I'm just going to pre-correct myself in case I'm wrong, because I have 2 weeks. I got that from like 3 sources, but then there was two other sources that said a month later.
Oh, okay.
So it was between 2 weeks and a month later.
You say 3 weeks.
I'm just going to say both. Yeah.
3 weeks later.
Meet in the middle and call it 3 weeks. It was shockingly hard to get accurate information on this. 2 to 4 weeks later, an anonymous tip was called in about a gun in a storage locker at the Los Angeles branch of Bullock Department Store. The gun was registered to Goldine Pizer, and ballistics matched it to being the same .38 Smith & Wesson that had killed Peter Fabiano.
Oh, fuck, was it? Jesus! Mm-hmm. That's a big gun.
Now, Goldine had no connection.
I'm gonna stop.
Except for it's not steal my man this time. It's I'm begging of you, please don't kill my man. Too late. Fuck's sake.
Master remixers on this fucking podcast, man, I'm telling you.
Honestly. Yeah, so Goldine had no connection to them whatsoever in any way, shape or form. So police were like,
what is the fuck? What is this?
Makes no sense. How is Goldine connected?
Let's find out.
When Goldine was picked up by police for questioning, she wasted no time. She was like, you got me. I did it. It was me.
Oh my God.
Goldine, have a bit of fucking mystery about you. Jesus.
Nope. She was fucking thrilled. She was so happy that they got her. She was like, it's going to be a weight off of my mind to finally get this off my chest.
Don't do it in the fucking first place, Goldine.
She was thrilled. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yes, see, she wouldn't have. But she admitted to the murder. She admitted that she committed it. But she said she hadn't committed the murder of her own accord. She had been put under a spell and coerced into it by none other than Joan fucking Rabble.
A spell, come on.
Fucking Joan.
At least say you were paid off and you'd fucking, I don't know, something to buy. A spell.
Do you know what? I kind of believe her. And
you think witchy bitch Joan is putting a spell?
Not a literal spell. Not a literal spell.
Spell of the poo.
More like, exactly. It's Joan's magic fanny that caused it.
Oh.
Not an actual spell. A worse spell than that.
Enough
spell. Mm-hmm. So, on Halloween and all, I'm getting this magical. Look at me. Shining. So she said, I had no motive personally. Whatever motive I had was to please Joan. I was always easily influenced. I have been impressionable and always trusting. So Goldine Kaiser was a meek, mild-mannered medical secretary. She was the daughter of German immigrants, and in 1944 she had married a pharmacist at a naval hospital named Herbert Krohm. But the marriage was a sham, used as a way for Goldine to deny her attraction to women, and the pair were soon divorced. And Goldine just kind of openly dated women after their divorce in the 40s. And I'm like,
Go Goldine. Yeah.
You go against them, you're going to get locked in an asylum, but fucking live it up until that point.
Isn't it though?
Mm-hmm. And honestly, from the one exact picture of Goldine that I could find, she looks like a bit of fucking, like a looker. Like, she looks really pretty. From what I can see, it's grainy and old timey and
everything always looks
picture.
Better in black and white as well, like, let's be honest.
Well, not Joan Rabble. Ooh. Joan Rabble looks like a gimpy version of Elvis.
Oh, no. I'm like, I can see it.
How? How did the magic cooter get all these people when that's what she looked like?
The hair. Not the cooter hair, obviously.
Yes.
But the big fucking Elvis mop.
So, poor fucking Goldine. I honestly, I feel really bad for her. I don't think I've ever had this much sympathy for a murderer before, but she earns it. Goldine and Joan were sort of friends-ish for a couple of years, but then in 1957, after Betty went back to her husband, Joan called up Goldine and was like, you want to come over? And they kind of got closer.
Right.
As
friends.
Friends of Ellen. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so sort friends of a romantic relationship ensued, we can assume. Assuming. She was quickly seduced by Joan Rabble, and Joan convinced Goldine that Peter was, and I quote, a vile, evil man, a man who destroys everything around him. She told the authorities that. Like, this, Goldine said this in a statement to the authorities. And she continues saying, she told me that he mistreated his wife and that he was dealing narcotics. So she was just out here, like, telling lies about Peter for no reason.
Bitch.
other than she was salty that he took his wife back.
But as well, the cheek of the tramp, I'm still not over the 37 miles, but to have your current girlfriend
I know
murder the husband of your other girlfriend.
Because apparently she basically, like, it did not impress Goldine at all that she would constantly still go on about Betty, because Goldine loved Joan, but it did not seem like the feeling was mutual, because Joan was still in love with Betty.
Drive your own fucking car and do your own murdering.
But they had been planning the murder for weeks, with the murder weapon being bought in Pasadena, yes, by Goldine, but it was with Joan's money. But she was clever enough to fucking, yeah, just give Goldine the money there, you get it in your name, so there's no connection to me, fucking Joan.
Joan sounded like an awful selfish bitch.
Honestly.
Yeah.
And it gets worse. It gets worse. You're about to really, really feel the sympathy that I feel for Goldine when I get to the next part. The pair had even driven by the Fabiano's home before, with Joan pointing Peter out so that Goldine would recognise him when the time came. On the night of the murder, with Joan behind the wheel of the neighbour's car she had borrowed, bitch, they sat and waited, watching the lights go out one by one in the house. Once the light of the master bedroom went out, Joan said, "Do it now." And after the deed was done and Goldine had run back to the car, Joan kissed her and said thank you. Sounds nice, right? Lovely. Mm. Committed a murder together.
Very
Absolutely
funny.
Not. They then went and burnt the clothes that they were wearing. Obviously, smart. Get rid of the evidence. Fair enough. But after that, Joan turned to Goldine and said, "Forget you ever knew me."
She is a trifle.
I mean, no, okay, okay.
Cunt. That's exactly what she is.
No, it's right? Not even that. She's fucking stupid. If you're going to kill someone with someone, you at least want to keep them on your side so they don't fucking rat you out of pettiness.
Exactly.
If someone fuck... If exactly. I had one of ye kill someone, right?
And then we were like, thanks,
and then
bye.
You were like, basically, fuck off. I would actually...
Yeah.
I'm telling everyone. Seemed I'm actually... Like I'm nearly... Anonymous fucking reports, like, into the guards. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I being nice to
exactly.
you? Like,
see, this is just the level of selfishness on Joan's part. And
I think
she's
stupid.
And again, this is my opinion, but I think she thought Goldine is the one that killed him, not me.
100%.
The gun is in Goldine's name, not mine. The car that was driving, not mine. Mine was in the driveway all night. I have an alibi. So I can walk away freely from Goldine, get her out of my fucking hair. And nothing's ever going to fall back on me. Like, she fully thought she was getting away with it.
She thinks, right, okay, if Goldine ever did say anything, just say, she's not into
deny,
yet,
deny,
nothing
deny.
To connect her. Like, that money, it was paid with my money. Do you know what I mean? Money's not overly traceable as well at the same time.
Yep.
So you didn't really have anything to trace her back to her.
It was cash. You can't trace
cash.
So she just left Goldine there. So I also have strong suspicions that it was, in fact, Goldine that called in the tip about the lockbox where she had stashed the gun. Because I'm like, who the fuck else would have known about it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But alas, their trial was set for late December. So, like, obviously, Goldine's testimony got Joan this time. They were like, yeah, we've got you now. We know what really happened, kind of thing. The pair had to go before... Ha! Ha! Oh, God. Okay. The pair had to go before three psychiatrists because authorities were concerned that their lesbianism would somehow make them unfit to stand trial. Because, you know, being gay was a mental illness back then.
I mean, they're clearly not, like, they have a point.
Do they? I mean, back then, I suppose
I'm
they
joking,
do.
Obviously. Like, no.
It angers
I was like,
me. I was
what
like, Reva, what the fuck?
Yeah.
When did you become a massive homophobe?
Like, I was like, okay, this joke
we were about
did not land.
Be.
I was like, fuck.
No.
No, but like,
Cesspool was about to become S-pool real quick.
See, I can see, like, the logic. I can understand the logic of, like, obviously, like, the societal thing.
Yeah, they thought it was a mental
illness. The foundation
illness,
was
so
there
then.
As to why they mm-hmm. wouldn't think that at the time. But
yeah,
it's funny,
yeah.
Like,
but as I sit here in 2020 telling this story, I am
it's
so
really fucking
enraged.
Aggravating like that.
But yeah, they went before the psychiatrists and apparently they were like, no, they're G. But after hearing Goldine's account of the murder, a psychiatrist wrote, "The only thought she had was that she had saved her friend, Joan Rabble, from an evil man."
Oh,
so sad. She just wanted to help Joan. Like, she never loved
Goldie.
I'm sorry, she never
she
did.
She used her 100%.
And Goldine loved Joan so much, and then Joan loved Betty, but I don't think Betty loved Joan anymore, or maybe she did, I don't know. But she went back to her marriage, so we have to assume not.
Well, we have to assume that she chose her marriage over her, so she may have still loved her, but she made a difference. She didn't choose her, so that's the choice she made. Mm-hmm. Do you know?
The two pled not guilty, with Goldine Pizer by reason of insanity. Now, not really insanity that she was coerced into it, but I kind of see her point.
She was very much manipulated.
She wasn't in her right mind. Yeah. She didn't do it off her own accord. Like she said, she didn't have a motive. She had no reason to kill him.
You can't call it insanity because she wasn't out of her mind.
I don't know if coercion is a defense that you can take, because that's what I would call it then. If you can say, like, I'm not guilty by reason of coercion, that is perfect. That is spot on. Insanity, not
but
so
even
much.
Then, like, you she have to give insane. People she a just... certain amount of responsibility, like, for their own decisions. Like, she wasn't forced to do anything, she was just manipulated into it. And it, like,
they could kind of,
you have
yeah,
to be
kind
of taken,
spin it as a crime of passion. It's, you know,
yeah, Goldine openly wept while giving her account of the murder in court and showed remorse. Joan, however, on the other hand, she didn't say anything this entire time. She didn't try to come to her defense. She just didn't.
Her silence speaks
fucking volumes. Do anything, say anything.
That wretched kind.
Mm-hmm. She was just completely fucking silent. She didn't admit her part in it. And apparently, she sat smiling the entire time, right up until she was led out of court.
Oh, bitch.
That is so fucking aggravating.
She's so trifling.
Isn't it proper psycho, like? And even in the picture that I seen, it's there's Goldine and then Joan is next.
I want to look these bitches up.
And she's like full on, like as if they're just having a friendly chat. And Goldine looks like she's about to fucking kill herself, because of course. The two were sentenced to 5 years to life after accepting a plea bargain that reduced the charge from first to second degree murder. Goldine Pizer was released in 1971, going on to be made an officer of the Miracle Mile chapter of the Professional Women's Club.
What?
Go Goldine.
Go her.
Right?
Fair fox.
Especially for, like, you know, them times when women were only sort of starting to rise in professions. I'm like, go Goldine. I'm so fucking happy for you. And she died at the ripe old age of 83 in 1998.
Lesser.
We can assume that Joan was released at some point, but there's little to no trace of her after 1957.
Fucking
no clue as to
Houdini
what the fuck happened.
Again.
Again. Her and Edward Edwards, honest Power to God. Couple. Betty Fabiano sold the two beauty businesses and died aged 81 in 1999. It's unknown if she had any involvement in her husband's death or if she ever saw Joan again. It's also unknown what Joan's exact motive for killing Peter was. Was it anger for taking Betty away? Was it to get back at Betty for leaving? Or did she hope that with Peter out of the way, that Betty would return? Unfortunately, we'll never know, and all we know is that love makes you do unspeakable things. It's a mental illness that we all suffer from, and there is no known cure.
I think my theory, personally, is Betty didn't know.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think
Joan
so either.
Joan did it of her own accord, thinking that she was punishing Peter, and also, if he was out of the picture, that was the only reason that Betty wasn't being with her.
Exactly.
She was removing the middleman that was keeping them apart.
And then as well,
she deluded herself.
With Peter dead, she had, she was going to come running to her for like a shoulder to cry on and comfort me and... You know, she could be there in the hour of need when the woman is at her weakest, because that's what she seemed to do, was go for weak and vulnerable women and manipulate them.
That's it, because she was able to do it.
Joan was a horrible, terrible person. Fucking
under
bitch.
The capital C.
But that is the murder of Peter Fabiano.
Yeah. I am shook. That's a lot. Joan's a massive dickhead, and everyone else around her, I feel like, was a victim of her craziness.
She would have got her comeuppance, because why? She's an unforgiving fucking sinner. And that bitch.
And the slua came and took
that bitch to hell.
That's why there's no fucking trace of her. There we go. We have cracked it. Solved it.
She definitely just went on now, and like became someone else. She just took on someone else, like took a new name.
Oh yeah, that's most likely what happened. Let us have the slua, Quiva. It's Halloween.
A very unsuccessful Elvis impersonator that performs at like OAP's retirement parties.
Oh my god, yes. Love that. No. That is what her job in hell is after the slua took her.
Yes. Ah.
There we
absolutely.
Go.
has to sing fucking blue suede shoes for the rest of her fucking life.
And now we have one more case to crack for our Halloween spooktacular. And Caoimhe, my dear, what have you got for us? I'm pretending I don't know. I'm not ready for this.
I am discussing the man who was named, well, not named, but they call him the man who killed Halloween.
Dun, dun, dun. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And he has a couple of names, but that's one that actually, I really liked it when I saw it. I was like, that he killed Halloween. So, Ronald Clark O'Brien. And can I just say, he spelled McDonald. Brian. O'Brien. O-B-R-Y-A-N.
Yeah,
just remind me. Have you?
Stop it, Ron.
Ron, stop!
Ron O'Brien. Okay, so he was born on the 19th of October, 1944. By the time of 1974, he lived with his wife, Danine, in Deer Park in Texas with his two kids. He had a son, Timothy, who was 8 and a half, and his daughter, Elizabeth, was 5. He worked as an optician in Houston, and he was actually the deacon at the Second Baptist Church, where he also sang in the choir and was in charge of the local bus program. So he, like, he did a lot of shit, like, you know, he did a lot of side hustles.
Fucking modern day insane. Like,
yeah, like, good guy Ronald. How the fuck did this go so bad?
So on October 31st, 1974, and I just noticed that he was actually born on October 19th, so what, like, 10 fucking days after his birthday, this happened. So he went trick-or-treating with his two kids in Pasadena, Texas, like in a little neighborhood. Mm. His neighbor, Jim Bates, and his two kids went with them. So it didn't say whether or not it was their neighborhood, but I presume it was more a case of, you know how here you kind of go around a few different estates? I presume that's what they were doing rather than whatever. That's not really relevant. So when they were talking to Jim, he said that their kind of system that they have was that Jim would wait like at the path, like at the sidewalk, and Ronald would go up to the doors with the kids for the sweets, and they'd come back, meet Jim, they'd go to the next house. Do you know that kind of way?
All right. Right. Okay. Yes, yes, yes.
Going around to all the houses, and they came to one house and the owner never came to the door. It happens all the fucking time. Yeah. People just don't have sweets, or you know, old
fucking
people or
no
whatever.
Cracks.
Yeah. Or like, do you know, sometimes they could have ran out of sweets by the time they came or something, do you know?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we do that. Yeah. Turn all the lights off and hide.
We do that from Gecko.
So yeah, after they went to the house, the door of this house, and the owner never came to the door, so the kids obviously got impatient. They ran back to Jim at the gate and moved on to the next house, but Ronald stayed behind at the door trying to see, was there anyone at home, like kind of giving them a chance basically to come to the door. He was kind of afraid that the kids had gotten impatient too quickly, you know.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
He caught up to the group then. He said that the owner of the house had come to the door and given him these 5 pixie sticks, which are basically, you know, those sherbet in a tube things.
Yeah, yeah.
5 foot long.
They're lovely on ice cream.
Oh, that's a good idea.
If you mix them into a can of Pepsi and give them to children, it's basically crap.
5 foot pixie sticks. Yeah.
Oh, that's like the height of me.
Yeah.
That's some dodgy manufacturing.
21 inches. No, wait. Were they not? They weren't 5 inches, were they?
That's not 5.
No,
not 5 foot.
I don't know where I'd...
The size of a small child.
Yeah, they probably were the height of like the youngest kids. That was fine. They went to a few more houses, but then it started to kind of drizzle, so they had to head home earlier than they'd expected.
Because of drizzle? That's weak sauce,
I fucking
man.
Know. That's what I thought as well. But anyways, they're Americans though,
I mean,
as well. Like,
you get
they're not as much used to rain.
No, but you sacrifice your lungs for the
honestly
sake of good sweets.
Because then you get to lay in bed and eat said sweets. It's worth getting the cold.
After midterm. Dumb kids.
Amateurs. But we shouldn't say that though.
Nah, fuck 'em, I will.
Anyway, so they headed home, and Ronald had held on to these pixie sticks until like they got home. When him and Jim were separating, he gave 2 pixie sticks to Jim to give his kids, and he gave one to his one each to his two kids. And then he met this 10-year-old boy who he recognized from church, and he gave him the 5th one. So two kids, his neighbor's 2 kids, and then this random kid he noticed from church that he knew from church got one as well. They got back home and the kids got ready for bed. So Timothy asked, could he, you know, have some of his sweets before he went to bed? You know, the fucking normal. Like, you know, a lot of parents will say you can only eat like a couple of pieces a day or whatever.
Dickheads.
Timmy asked, could he have a piece before they went to bed? And his dad said he could, so he chose his pixie stick to have, because obviously it was fucking massive. So
the fucking size of it, yeah.
Clever fucking kid.
Yeah, I actually thought that. I was like, genius. That's exactly what I done. Like, you definitely picked the biggest thing. Like, you get an Easter egg or something, and you're like, I'm eating the biggest thing. But anyways, you know what has the powdered like sweets inside it? Like, I'm presuming it's sherbet or whatever. I think it's sherbet.
Yeah, it is sherbet.
It is sherbet.
He had trouble getting the sherbet out. I presume he probably got like spits in it, you know, and then it clumps
and
blah, blah,
it sticks. And it's the worst thing.
Yeah. So, and Timmy being what, fucking 8 and a half you know, obviously struggled. He struggled for a while to get the sweets or like the sherbet out of the straw, so Ronald helped him loosen up, you know, he helped him get it out basically.
Yeah.
So okay. When he got the first taste of the pixie stick, he said that it tasted like weird, that he didn't like the taste of it, that it was bitter. So
right.
Ronald gave him some Kool-Aid to wash away the taste. But I'm presuming that Timmy did the whole like fucking chug it up and dropped like half of it into his mouth. As you do. Yeah. You know, it just falls in.
Yeah.
After eating however much he ate of it, he immediately started saying that his stomach was hurting. So he ran into the bathroom and he started vomiting and like convulsing.
Fucking
so he
hell.
Started having like fits like pretty much in the first like
straight minutes. Away like.
Like wow. 5 minutes time, he straight away, it was, you know. So Ronald, when he was telling people, like telling, I presume the police afterwards, he said that he was holding on to Timothy while he was getting sick and that the child just went limp in his arms. They called the 911 or whatever and an ambulance came, mm-hmm. but Timmy unfortunately died en route to the hospital less than an hour after he ate the pixie stick.
That's fucking quick.
Yeah, so what like that's fast, like that's
very, very quick.
Yeah, how did that escalate so quickly?
Timothy's death obviously did the rounds. People heard about it and people obviously were terrified because yeah. they knew that it was because of poisoned sweets and yeah. all their kids had just been trick-or-treating and had been eating the fucking sweets that they'd collected.
Yeah, so, and it's not like you can pinpoint where what came from or what was it.
Yeah,
yeah.
And is this so. The only time it would have happened?
Yeah.
Fuck my kids already after eating sweets.
Well, nobody would have known enough. Like, nobody would have known, like, that yeah. it was the pixie stick and nobody would have known which house it came from to, like, be able to narrow down, like, were they safe or not.
Exactly, yeah.
So, you know, it's understandable that people were freaked. So, apparently, numerous. Oh, my God.
New numerous.
Fuck numerous.
Claim
fuck
it. Numerous. Claim it. Claim it.
Numerous.
We
numerous.
Don't need that Latin-y shit. Numbers.
Numerous parents in Deer Park, like, in, you know, his area and the surrounding area, they all returned their candy that the kids had got from trick-or-treating. Yeah. They all brought it into the police, fearing that some of the sweets would have been laced with poison. That yeah. poison, mm-hmm. you know.
As you would, like.
The police initially didn't suspect Ronald of anything until Timmy's autopsy revealed that the pixie stick that he'd eaten was laced with a fatal dose of potassium cyanide.
Oh, yeah, shit.
Which explains the bitter taste.
Cyanide and no happiness.
And how fuck... Lizzie, I'm out here trying to be serious and you're just... But that explains how it escalated so quickly.
So quickly.
Of course it would, with fucking cyanide.
Yeah.
They said as well that the taste of cyanide is, as Timmy said, like very like, it's like an acrid bitter taste. So a very like... Do you know, I don't know how to describe acrid.
It would
like, kind
of,
you know,
really
an acid-y
like
kind
of coating on your tongue, like really
a very
like,
chemically
like if you lick a battery.
Yeah, and
never done it, but sure.
It has a burn. It burns your mouth the same way like
yeah.
lye would. I had to look up what lye yeah. was. It's like the stuff you use to make soap, and it burns the shit out of people. Like it can give you third degree burns, like if it touches you for long mm-hmm. enough. So
yeah.
like
yeah,
that's why people
dangerous.
Use it to like decomp bodies quicker.
Yeah, that's why you pour it on bodies. It also covers up the smell. Just in case you need to kill
just
some
in case
people.
You want to
and
do something
then
cute.
Decompose their body. Lie. Lie for both cases. It's perfect. Is lie the perfect murder weapon?
So obviously Ronald had been given 5 pixie sticks and 4 of the 5 were recovered by the police from the other children. None of them had eaten the sweets. But the 10th
yeah.
child, the 10-year-old, or the 5th child,
little
the 10-year-old
kid.
That he had met that he knew from church, yeah, he had eaten his. So when they found out, like when they had heard that that's what it was, that it was from Jim's, or not Jim's, from Ronald's, you know, the sweet
pixie
that he'd gotten from the house.
Yeah.
They obviously went looking for it and they became hysterical because they couldn't actually find it when they went looking for it. The police actually came to the house to tell them and they obviously looked and they couldn't find it. So they were like freaking the fuck out. They ran upstairs and found their son asleep, but he was holding the pixie stick. That he had fallen asleep before eating it.
Oh, so he didn't eat it. Oh, thank God.
Oh, I thought he was like in a coma. Oh, Quiva. My heart.
Dead already.
Thank God.
The reason he hadn't eaten it was because he'd actually fallen asleep trying to open.
To open it.
Because there was staples. Two staples on it, on the top, that he wasn't able to open.
Wait.
Thank God.
That father yeah. would have seen those ganky staples on that. Sorry now. Do you not think that's fucking dodgy?
He mightn't have though, because the thing is that when Ronald gave him the things, he might have straight away just passed them off to the 2 kids. You know what I mean? Like, he mightn't have looked at them.
Oh, that father, right. I thought you meant Ronald, and I was like, there's a good reason he didn't mention
No, yeah, yeah, because the kid who...
Yeah.
Oh, no, no,
yeah.
Lizzie, no. They're... He wasn't the kid that was trick-or-treating with them. He met him outside the house when they were going home. He was just a random kid they ran into on the street.
No, but I mean in general. Like, the fella...
Yeah, he probably did, like we've said, just pass them off to your kid. Because you don't pay that close attention, you know what I mean?
I mean...
Oh, you're talking about Jim, that he should have noticed that his two kids... It also was, like, the 40s, so God knows, maybe that was standard.
People didn't pay attention to
it. Could have been. And that.
Or not the 40s, it was the 70s, sorry, he was born in the 40s.
Still accurate. Yeah. So we thank God for those staples that he couldn't get the...
Yes, we thank God for those staples. So when the pixie sticks were taken in and analysed, they found that all five of them had been opened. The top 2 inches had been emptied and refilled with cyanide powder and then resealed.
Also, the first thing they took a gulp of was cyanide.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Tramp.
Fucking hell, like, that is making double sure that you get them, like.
Yeah, there was no, like, there was going to be no doubts about it. Like, Timmy got a full mouthful of fucking cyanide, like, no wonder tasted it terrible. So a pathologist obviously then was given the pixie sticks to analyse because they obviously needed to find out
what the fuck,
the exact details of what had happened. Yeah. Apparently the candy, it's all in American language, the candy that Timmy had eaten contained enough cyanide to kill 2 adults.
Fucking hell, his poor tiny body.
What, and he was 8?
Yeah.
Yep.
And the 4 other pixie sticks contained dosages that could kill 3 to 4 adults.
Jesus Christ.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. So Ronald initially told the police that he couldn't remember which house he'd gotten the pixie sticks from. So they obviously were suspicious of this because police became obviously suspicious of him because when they spoke to Jim, they found out that the group, like the 2 men and the 4 kids, had only taken their children to homes on 2 streets because obviously they went home early because it had been raining. So there's no way. It wasn't like he went.
Not remember.
It wasn't like they'd gone to hundreds of houses or gone to multiple different estates. Or like, you know, gone to a lot of houses where you would kind of mix them up. Like, you've gone maybe to 20 houses, like, you know where you fucking were. Do you know?
Yeah.
They went to all these different houses that Jim obviously told them about and they started really suspecting Ronald because they found that none of these homes had given out pixie sticks as Halloween candy. So they started focusing in and like zeroing in on Ronald. Ronald brought them around the neighborhood 3 times. He walked 3 times around the neighborhood before he led them to the home that the group had visited.
Was he making sure they weren't home?
To me, it sounds like, you know when you were a kid and you told a lie and you just got so deep that you just really tried to like stretch out the time before people really found out that you were telling a lie because you were trying to think about an excuse. Like he was trying to buy himself more time. Do you know that kind of way? He was like, bring them around.
So did he actually walk around the neighbourhood 3 times or did he tell the coppers he walked around?
He brought the police around with him 3 times while he tried to pretend that he could remember where he was.
Right, no, okay. Right.
Sorry, I thought you meant the kid that he brought the kids around 3 times before he went
sorry,
to that house.
That's my bad.
Okay, perfect. So it was the police.
Ronald said that he had revisited the home before he went back to catch up with the group, that he had left the house with the kids and then gone back to see... Like, was there actually nobody there? Which, obviously, who the fuck does that?
Yeah.
Mm.
He said the owner of the home didn't turn the lights on but cracked the door open and handed him 5 pixie sticks. And Ronald said
why would you accept that?
I don't know.
Creepy disembodied hand handing you candy for your children.
Not only just a hand, but it was just an arm which he described as hairy.
All right, Ronald.
there's a quote of the home was owned by a man named Courtney Melvin. Melvin was an air traffic controller at William P. Hobby Airport and did not get home until 11 p.m. on Halloween night. Police ruled Melvin
full on alibi.
Police ruled Melvin out as a suspect when nearly 200 people confirmed that Melvin was at work.
Come on, Ronald, for fuck's sake.
Put a bit of fucking effort into it.
Even if he'd said, listen, someone followed me up the road with them, you know, because, and then they could say, well, maybe it wasn't the guy, you know, don't fucking say that there was someone in the house, like, you know, because what robber,
a very specific
even
house.
If it was an intruder, like what intruder is going to give Halloween candy out the door? Do you know, it doesn't make any sense.
Murdering the person in the house.
If he'd said, oh, someone kind of followed me up the road as I was leaving, or anyways, we won't get into what he could have done. Because so the police obviously started really investigating Ronald. So when they really went into depth,
yep.
that doesn't make any sense. I don't know. When they really focused in on him, they discovered that he was over $100,000 in debt, which now is about and would be equivalent to about $520,000.
How do you get that much in debt?
$500,000 in debt.
How do you owe?
Drugs, gambling.
Money? Yeah, gambling is the one I'm thinking. Like bookies and loans and shit like that.
He had a history of being on top of being so heavily in debt, he had a history of being unable to hold on to a job. In the 10 years before the crime, he had held over 21 jobs.
Fucking hell.
21, that's two jobs. That's every 6 months you're changing jobs.
Two jobs a year, yeah. That is crazy.
And it's not dropping out of a job and going back to he started a new fresh job every single time.
I want to know, what was he caught robbing to pay off said fucking debt that he was in?
At the time of his arrest, he was suspected of theft at his job at Texas State Optical and was close to being fired. His car was about to be repossessed. He had defaulted on several bank loans and had the family home foreclosed on.
Jesus Christ.
No, it's good. Did these dumb bastards not realise the first thing the police are going to check is you and your financial situation? Yet to kill a kid for what? Insurance money?
Mm-hmm. Police discovered that Ronald had taken out life insurance policies on his children in the months preceding Timothy's death.
Fuck's sake.
Why Miss fucking Martin?
And then, did I miss this part of the story? Was he a single dad or was there a mother on the scene?
There was a mother.
She's
just not really mentioned because obviously she had no involvement.
She's probably losing her fucking mind.
Fair.
In January 1974, so 10 months literally before this all happened, he took out a $10,000 loan, or not loan, life insurance policy on both of his kids. So about $52,000 nowadays. So that's a lot of fucking money.
Not enough to get him out of the hole, though.
No. 1 month before Timmy's death, Ronald took out an additional $20,000 policy on both children, despite the objections of his life insurance agency. So it's not $20,000 between them, it's $20,000 each. And
did that up them to $30,000 then?
What?
Because they had the $10,000 policy originally, and then you said an additional $20,000.
Yeah, so $30,000 each. Which would be approximately $150,000 nowadays. Mm. And he was hoping to kill both of them, so $300,000. He gave cyanide to both of them.
Yeah.
It's just Timmy's the only one who ate it.
So $60,000 for his
two kids.
$100,000, did you say he was in debt?
Yeah.
So he's still missing $40,000.
Yeah. Still not enough, but... Oh, wait. Excuse me. It is enough. Because in the days preceding Timmy's death, Ronald took out yet another $20,000 policy on each child. The various...
So he would have exactly had his $100,000.
Yeah.
Fucking...
See what I mean? Man's not smart.
Ronald's wife maintained that she had no idea about the insurance policies on her children. So
I believe it.
Yeah, me too. There's no way anyone would be the amount of debt he got himself into. She probably didn't even know he was in this much debt.
Definitely not.
Yeah. Police learned that on the morning of Timmy's death, so before they went trick-or-treating, Ronald called his insurance company to inquire about collecting the policies that he had taken out on his son. So he was kind of asking if something happens to the kids, how do I go about collecting? So
he should not be your first question, by the way. If you're to do that, you don't ring up and ask ages after, when you're having the discussion and you're forming the policy, what the fuck do I even do, blah 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 blah. Do a big spiel, don't ring them up a couple of a while later, if that were to happen to the kids,
as an isolated incident,
it's so strange.
And not even, I bet you it wasn't even a touch, now I don't want to say this, but little Timmy's looking a bit sick or something. No, he's probably so listen, if Tim dies, how do I get money from him?
After they learned that Ronald had actually visited a chemical supply store in Houston to buy cyanide shortly before this all happened, and he actually left without buying anything because he learned that the smallest amount available to buy was £5.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, so police then obviously, once they found that out, they began to suspect that it was him that had killed Timmy. Police obviously, their theory was that he had laced the sweets with poison so he could kill them and collect their life insurance policies. And they said that they believe that he gave the other children the candy in an effort to cover up his crime.
I was going to say to have some form of deniability that why would I kill these neighbourhood children when I only needed life insurance for my two?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not being funny, but he very easily could have just been like, isn't that something that the women used to do back then? Is they just give cyanide like in a tiny amount every so often and it would just gradually kill you. He very easily could have done that over a long period of time and it just slowly. Anyways, they're going to find cyanide in someone's system. Like, it's probably the first thing they look for in those kind of deaths. Like,
yeah, this is like, this isn't early. This is the 70s. Like, they have ways and means.
It's the mid 70s too. Like, there's no
figuring it out. Mid 70s. Yeah.
He obviously was questioned like multiple times, but he was like, "No, I didn't do anything. It wasn't me." Blah blah. As per usual, as expected. Despite the police never finding out where or how he bought the poison, he was arrested for Timmy's murder on November 5th in 1974. So what, 5 days after it all happened? So pretty quickly,
not
like.
Not long at all, really.
When they say they don't know where he found it or bought it, he obviously bought it off someone who was going using it. Like, he just bought it off someone who had bought the £5. Like, if they were selling it in bulk like that, they're selling it in bulk like that because, you know, rat poison, whatever. So he obviously just bought it off a farmer.
Yeah, you'd need it for like industrial use.
He just said that he,
or some shit.
He just wanted, like, he probably just would have said, "Listen, I just want it for rats. Like, I don't want that much. Like, can I just buy a small bit off you?"
Mm-hmm.
And obviously whoever sold him never came out and said that it was them because they didn't want to get in trouble for it. He was indicted on 1 count of capital murder and 4 counts of attempted murder.
Good.
He entered a plea of not guilty to all 5 counts.
Fuck off.
His trial then began on May 5th, 1975. So about 6 months after it all happened. His trial went on in Houston. And obviously they had people come in that were educated on this whole situation.
Yeah.
They had a chemist come in who actually knew Ronald personally, and he testified that in summer of 1973 Ronald had contacted him asking about cyanide and how much would be fatal. Like, how much would you need to kill someone?
That's just a weird question to hit somebody up with.
That's what I mean. Isn't he's a fucking moron. He just keeps ringing people asking random questions. Like, do you know, at least wait until it comes up in conversation, like, oh, how much would I need to kill a rat, and then do the maths on the body weight. Do you know,
or
like
even
a normal person.
Yeah. Amongst ourselves, the way we do sometimes, where it's like, how much do you reckon it takes to kill a person? But say in front of the fucking people that know what they're talking about, so they can turn around and be like, haha, I know the answer. And you'd be like, oh, fuck, right.
I have an answer for you. Yeah, exactly. Or even if you framed it in the sense of a question of like, look, I'm thinking to get some. I'm considering getting some cyanide because I have a bit of a rat problem, but I'm concerned that the children might get into it. If they were to ingest some of it, how much of it would be fatal before I'd be able to save them, kind of?
Yeah,
thing.
Like how
you know,
like,
yeah, something
kind of,
like that.
Like, how much should I put into each little bundle so, like, if a dog or something eats it, like, that it won't kill them? Do you know
it
what I mean?
Won't affect it. Exactly.
That you could say, oh,
come on, man.
Use your fucking brain.
This is 10 seconds of thinking off the top of our heads.
And already better what he fucking did.
We do not condone murder. We're not out here trying to tell you how to get away with killing your kids. But if you're going to do it, at least fucking try.
If you're going to do it, he very easily could have laid poison and said to Timmy, listen, don't eat this now. It tastes really, really, really nice. But don't eat it because it's bad
for
you.
But don't eat it.
The kid's going to fucking eat it on the side. Yeah, so that chemist obviously testified and said that Ronald was showing an unusual interest. And a chemical supply salesman had also testified that Ronald had asked him how to purchase cyanide. They found that he had taken a class at Harris County Community College and he had asked his teacher how much poison it would take to kill certain types of animals.
Stop it, because he was definitely picking an animal that's close enough to the size of the
giant. Like, how much would you need to give a deer? Like, what are you fucking...
There you go, yeah.
Like, ask about a rat, like, and then just do the body weight maths. Do you know, a rat is what, like, half a kg?
Don't go for big
and multiply
game, like,
it up.
Honestly.
But we can clearly scope he's not.
No,
but he obviously wasn't very good at the maths
exactly,
either, because he gave them like enough to kill 4 adults.
Yeah, like Lizzie said, we've established already that he was not smart, so quick maths was not at the top of his mind.
So Ronald's actually, his friends and his co-workers, why did I stutter? So co-workers, okay, I thought it was very noticeable. I heard it a lot in my brain. I heard it really hard in my brain. Anyways, some of Ronald's friends and co-workers took the stand as well. And they testified that in the months before Timmy's death, Ronald showed an unusual interest in cyanide and spoke about how much it would take to kill a person. His sister-in-law and brother-in-law both testified that on the day of Timmy's funeral, he spoke of using the money from Timmy's insurance policy to take a long vacation and buy other items. I mean, like...
Your child is in the fucking ground in front of you and you're like... Lads,
can't wait,
do you want
to go Hawaii,
on a fucking
like,
quick 2 week trip to Spain?
Benidorm, like, Benidorm, Benidorm. No. Don't fucking think so.
He's an idiot.
I'm not even low-key stressed. I'm high-key stressed by this.
I was going to say something, but I don't think I'm allowed.
Ronald continued to say that he was innocent. He maintained that he didn't do anything. His defence mainly drew on decades-old urban legend that there was a mad poisoner who handed out Halloween candy laced with poison, or needles or candy apples with razor blades inside them. These stories have been going on for decades, and despite obviously there's no proof or there's no documentation whatsoever that they're real, but that's what he used as like that. Obviously it wasn't him, that it was obviously the crazy person that keeps poisoning kids, even though that never is, but anyways,
it never has happened until he made it happen.
Yeah, the case and subsequent trial garnered national attention, and the press dubbed him the Candyman. So throwback to,
sorry, the title's already been taken,
good old Deanie. Yeah. Wait, who came first, Dean or this cunt?
74 versus 1973. Oh my god, Dean was first. Dean was first by a year. He only beat him by a year.
Oh my god. Weren't they also in Texas?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in Houston, yeah.
Texans, calm your fucking tits.
Don't like that. Stop dubbing everyone the Candyman.
I mean, they both make sense as to why you would call them the Candyman.
As to why they're called, yeah, their respective names. And in a scrap, we know who's winning as well. Like, when they're both down in hell.
I was going to say, do we pit the Candymen up against each other?
Oh, Dean's making mincemeat of him, like, 100%.
Dean is, absolutely. I didn't think I'd ever be on Dean's side for anything, but,
him and
like,
his lizard eyes.
Dean is winning the Battle of the Candymen, yeah. That's for a fact. Anyway, okay.
Back to child murder.
On June 3rd, 1975, a jury took 46 minutes to find him guilty of capital murder.
Almost even too
four
long.
Four counts of attempted murder. And they took 71 minutes to sentence him to death.
Yes.
With the whole, I don't have any notes in this now. I should have written them down, but I didn't. I chose not to. And it was a bad decision. There was three jurors. Do you know how they have like an original amount of jurors? I think it's like, they narrow it down to 12, but they have like 20 or something at the start.
Yes.
Three of the original jurors were actually like cut out of
the selection.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Because they were fundamentally opposed to capital punishment.
I mean, in the case of child murder, I don't feel like you ever should be, but no.
No, they said that, like, I should have written down this shit, but I didn't. I don't know why. But I remember, so it's fine. They asked each one, obviously being put to death was kind of the final thing. If he was to be convicted, that was what would happen to him. So they obviously asked each juror, yeah, like, listen, do you understand that if this has happened that he will be put to death? And they said yes. And they said that, do you understand the fact that if he is found guilty that this is what will happen? And they said yes. And then it was like, do you, no matter what he did, if it is true, do you still disagree with, you know, being put to death? And they said yes. So those three were taken off, and his defence like really kind of kicked up a fuss about it, because they said that it wasn't fair to kind of get it. I can see why they got rid of those three people, but he was really against the fact that they got rid of people that were kind of on his side, as he said it.
Well, they probably still would have found him guilty, just not sentenced him to
death.
Yeah,
exactly. They just didn't agree with people. I personally probably wouldn't agree with it either.
No, I think he should have lived a long and horrible life in prison. We've discussed this already before. Our personal views on the death penalty in certain situations.
Yeah.
But I agree. I don't think they had any business being taken off of the jury, because at the end of the day, it still would have been 9-3, and therefore the death penalty would have been passed.
No, I'm pretty sure that it has to be...
Does it have to be unanimous
I'm
for
pretty
that?
Sure it has to be unanimous, like, across the board, doesn't it? It has to be 12, because if there's one juror that doesn't agree, it's a hung jury. It
because,
has to be,
yeah, it ends in a hung jury.
That,
yeah.
Is that not for guilty or not guilty?
For sure, if he's found guilty, it's for the death penalty. Like, no. That would have been his sentence anyway, because they would have decided that in a pre-trial. Because a pre-trial...
No, it was 46 minutes to decide that he was actually found guilty, and then it took them 71 minutes to sentence him to...
Decide what sentence he was to get. Was it life in prison? Was it 25? Was it death? That's what I mean. I think if it's something like what sentence, then I don't think a hung jury counts. I think you can have a majority rule. And then the judge can make the final decision as to whether he agrees with it or not. Now, I can't say that is fact.
No, it sounds like
know.
It makes sense, though.
Because...
We're going to go with that, but yeah.
Yeah, because the judge does make the ultimate final decision. He can completely overrule what the jury has decided. I know that for a fact.
Yeah. So. Anyways, so they found him guilty, and shortly after he was convicted, his wife filed for divorce. I'm presuming she knew he had done it and stuff like this, but it had only been like a few months, and she probably, you know, I suppose
she was probably hoping that some evidence would come out that the man she loved did
murdered
not murder.
Realistically, like, she lost a child. And she lost her husband. Despite the fact that her husband turned out to be an evil piece of shit, he was still a husband, and he was still the man that she wanted to marry, yeah, like, because wanted to live with.
She's probably been bombarded with all this news, like, how much
that she knew and everything, like, people probably thought
and
she
then
knew.
Then, with the whole thing that happened with the murder.
The amount of grief that poor woman would have gone through.
It's, you know, I can see why it took her so long. She probably was waiting for him to be really convicted before she went through with it. And you'd like, you don't know what her home life was like either. I know that's a massive like presumption, but she could have been afraid that if she did, then he got out, she could have been fearful of him as well. I know it's, I thought it was kind of, she did wait a good while before she applied for divorce, which is why I kind of wanted to talk about it.
Yeah. Are you able to start?
She just needed some time before dealing.
But can
with
you
that.
Even file for divorce when one's like in court? Because it could be in contempt of court. Because how can you go to divorce court when you're in murder court?
Well, I presume it's more a case of that she can divorce him for going to jail for killing her child without having anything.
Oh, absolutely,
being involved.
Yeah. But like, she would probably, that then, if she wanted the marriage annulled.
She probably
could.
Would have had to wait until he was convicted.
Yeah, exactly. You needed proof that he actually was guilty, not just you're saying it. Even though we know, but like,
I just kind of wanted to give her side as well.
She was already in court to find out if her husband had murdered their child or not. You're not going to want to go through a divorce court at the same fucking time.
Poor woman, like.
It's a lot, like. Yeah. So much. So quickly for this poor woman. And the little girl as well that survived, the surviving child.
Yeah, when you think about the three kids that survived, like, that could have been me. Like, that little lad who fell asleep with the fucking pixie stick, like, he fell asleep hugging.
That's so close.
Enough cyanide to kill four adults. The only reason he didn't eat it was because he couldn't get the fucking staple off it.
Just thank God. Thank fucking Christ for that.
Anyways, Ronald did something right.
How does this end?
Ronald did something wrong, and it ended up being something right. When he was convicted, he was confined to the Huntsville unit in Huntsville, Texas. You know, obviously in the prison. According to Reverend Carl Pickett, who was a former chaplain, O'Brien was shunned and despised by his fellow death row inmates for killing a child and was absolutely friendless. So, you know, obviously in prison how there's like ranks basically that like rapists and child murderers and all that kind of stuff are like, they're hated by everyone because it's, I suppose it's a bit of a superiority thing, like, at least I didn't kill a child. I might have killed four men, but I didn't.
Yeah, there's some crimes that even to criminals are completely unforgivable, and it's usually crimes against children and women.
He had no friends, and they reportedly petitioned to hold an organised demonstration on his execution date to express their hatred of him.
Jesus.
That's how much they thought he was a massive dickhead. And I suppose as well, when you think about it, like, all of them, well, not all of them, like, a lot of them could have had children that were that kid's age on the outside who go trick-or-treating every year. That, like, I feel like the reason he would have been hated so much is because that he didn't only kill his own child. He tried to kill...
He attempted to kill others.
He attempted to kill four others.
Four others, and three of them weren't his own. They were just collateral damage.
That as well, and the fact that, like...
He didn't kill them for any good reason. I know that sounds so bad.
No, he killed them
for money.
To fucking pay his debts, which is not a good enough reason.
It's the
not
worst.
That there is
it's
a
the
good
worst
reason,
reason
to kill
though.
Your
it's,
child.
It's more selfish. Like, I feel like I don't know why it's worse, but it is. It just is. And I feel like trying to explain it is going to make her sound terrible, but I feel like it just puts a different spin on it. The fact that it's like for an insurance policy.
Yeah. Usually when you kill a child, it's because you've had some sort of a psychotic break.
Like driving your car into the river or
you
something
know?
Like that and you go
or
with them.
Because you're already a bit sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it is, most of the time in a case like that where a parent murders a child, it is sort of a thing where like, well, I killed them to protect them.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of mothers have that moment where they're like, I need to save them from the world. Or
want to
take
them with me.
You can't afford them anymore. And so, and usually it is a murder-suicide. But he had no fucking intentions of dying. He had no remorse.
He just put a price tag on his own kid's head.
Exactly that. And that's why it's so fucking bad.
I don't know, I'm kind of laughing because you'll see why. His first execution date was set for August 8th, 1980. But his attorney successfully petitioned for a stay of execution. So a second date was scheduled for May 25th, 1982, and that date was also postponed. Judge Michael McSpadden is a fucking legend, right? He scheduled a third execution date for 31st of October, 1982, which was the 8th anniversary of Timmy's death.
Yes, Michael. Yes.
And he offered to personally drive Ronald to the death chamber. He was like, I'll get you there myself if I have to. Anyways.
Fucking fuck you and your stay of executions, you piece of shit.
It would have been the first time Texas executed an inmate by lethal injection, and the Supreme Court delayed the date yet again to give Ronald a chance to pursue an appeal to seek a new trial. A fourth date was scheduled for March 31st, 1984. So it's been 4 years now since he was first sentenced to be executed. Like, since he was first... his first date. Like, he's been in jail now since 75, and it's now 84. He's been in jail for, like, 9 years, and he still hasn't been...
Yeah, because I thought you said 8 before.
Say it again?
Yeah, I was thinking, I was like, where did 4 years come from when it's
yeah, on the
years?
Halloween.
No, like, I was trying to say that it was, like, it had been 4 years since his first
execution date. Yeah.
Sorry, a fourth date was scheduled for March 31st, 1984, and Ronald's lawyer sought a fourth date on the basis that lethal injection was a cruel and unusual punishment. But on the...
So cyanide.
Yeah.
Mouthful first, like, fuck off.
So it was scheduled for the 31st, but on March 28th, the request to postpone was rejected, and on the 31st of March 1984, finally, shortly after midnight, so it had just turned March 31st, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was executed by lethal injection at the Huntsville unit. In his final statement, Ronald maintained his innocence, saying that he felt the death penalty was wrong. He added, "I forgive all, and I do mean all, those who have been involved in my death. God bless you all, and may God's best blessings be always yours."
Ron, don't be running with your tail between your legs now.
Who are you forgiving?
Like,
I forgive you.
No one asked you to.
No reason. Nobody needs forgiveness from you.
Nobody asked.
Like, thank you. Next.
The death penalty is wrong, but poisoning your child to get a few quid is okay.
Not a bother. Yeah, absolutely.
And then the senseless murder.
Solid fucking murder logic,
of their
Ron.
Fucking kids.
Murder.
So, obviously during his execution, people knew that he was being executed at... You know, I'm presuming that it's like advertised that this person's being executed on this day at this time.
Yeah, you can put in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
So, during the execution, a crowd of 300 demonstrators gathered outside the prison and cheered, while some of them yelled "trick or treat."
Don't you just love that?
Others,
I love it.
Obviously, anti-death penalty people showed up as well, and the people who were there celebrating the fact that he was being executed started throwing Halloween candy at them.
That would be us, and don't even dare try to tell us that one. Like, "trick or treat this bitch."
Yeah.
Lob like a hard sweet right at the forehead.
Yeah, honestly.
So anyways, Ronald is buried in Webster, Texas, in Forest Park East Cemetery. Timmy is buried in Forest Park Lawndale Cemetery in Houston. A former Pasadena police officer, Bill Lanier, he investigated Ronald after his son's death. He's just one of those guys, you know, some people just have like an interest in specific cases. That he's in a 2003 interview with the Chronicle, which is obviously a paper in America, he said that Ronald never confessed to his son's murder. Bill said, "He was a wolf in sheep's clothing. Every Halloween I think about him. He's a despicable man, and his whole life was a lie."
And a man who's a
friend. Yeah.
Agree.
So, yeah, that is the story of the man who killed Halloween.
That was horrific. Thank you. You've ruined my evening.
I aim to please.
We were having so much fun, and then little Timmy got murdered, and that was real sad. But very, very, very glad that... And I don't usually agree with the death penalty, but honestly...
I mean, I would never vouch for it, and I would never say that. But at the same time, I can see in specific cases that it's not the worst thing that happened.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Because I know it caused him pain that he was sentenced to death. So that
I feel like it's...
And that he had to suffer for that pain for 9 years. So... a year longer than he allowed his own son to live for, and that brings me joy.
I feel like it's more a case of it's like, it's not my business to try and stop these things, and if that's the law, that's the law, and to be honest, fuck you.
I sincerely hope that the Slua have got their hands on his fucking soul too. I really, really hope so. I hope they tormented him for 9 years while he was waiting for his execution too. That was our Halloween spooktacular. We had double murder and some spooky, spooky ghosts. It's going to be much worse from next week. We are starting yet another heavy hitter series. Three individual stories again. These are cases that were really, really prominent to us. Next week, we will be starting off with
the Robin Hood Hill murder / the West Memphis 3.
So that's going to be barrels of fun.
Yeah.
So stick with us for that. We'll be continuing that. We haven't decided if we're going to break up this series with in-betweener episodes, so we'll let you know next week when we start that how we feel. Other than that, we'll have two more stories from me in the middle, as always, and Quiva wrapping it up with her high-profile ass case.
Mm-hmm.
So stick with us, as usual, for the next couple of weeks. We hope everyone is staying safe out there. If you do go trick-or-treating, keep your social distancing. Disinfect fucking everything. Don't put anything in your mouth that was unwrapped or dodgily stapled. Wear your masks. Check your kids' candy. Keep each other safe. Have a good Halloween. Don't forget to check out our friends over at Coffee and the Macabre on whatever you're listening to us on now. Positive vibes and negative tests. And other than that, always be a hypocrite.
Don't forget to tense your ankles.
And join our hunt.
It was... It's a great movie.
I just remember the part where he's like, are they, oh, is it kids are in wax or something? Was, or that, did I make that up?
No, they're ventriloquist dolls.
Oh. And your one is making them and your man is like, who? And then she's like, who? And then she comes out and then he's like, huh.
This is the best description of a movie ever. We are here to talk about Halloween. So let's dive the fuck in.